This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Against all odds, we've made it to hour number 4 of the G-Bag Nation. Jeff Cavanaugh here, along with, of course, you hear Chris Arnold riding shotgun and playing the flag, Brian Broaddus and Lucius Alexander. And we're honored to bring in a guest right now who has been right in the heart, in the middle of some of the rumoruskies in the NFL, the great Michael Lombardi, currently with The Athletic and doing the GM Shuffle podcast. Good afternoon, Michael, and thank you for your time.
Hey there. Thank you, guys. Appreciate you having me. It's nice to be here.
Yes, I also forgot to mention the best man at Broaddus' wedding, which means it's ultimately his fault that it didn't work out, so there is that. But, Michael, yesterday we were talking about the idea of Antonio Brown with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and then we saw that you were saying that that could be a possibility. But then I told Brian last segment, Diana Russini comes out today and says there's no interest there. How do you respond to that accusation, Diana coming right at your neck?
Well, I'm sure she probably got it from a reliable source in the building. But, look, I got it from somebody that's trying to get I think there's certainly a movement. Look, I think you got to go back a little bit. I said this on my podcast. Brady spent 13 days with Antonio Brown, and those 13 days impacted Tom Brady. Impacted him in terms of his talent, his ability to see what he saw on that football field. And to some, it may have been the best receiver performance by any New England Patriot player on those practice fields, going back to Deion Branch, Randy Moss, any of those guys. So I think that impacts Tom. And knowing Tom, and I don't know if Russini knows Tom at all, but I do, Tom is not going to just stop when he thinks the team should do something. He's going to be persistent. And I think it's been all along he's wanted Antonio to go there. Now, I'm sure that Jason Light, the general manager of the or Bruce Arians, who Russini did a report with, a couple months ago, a year ago, probably said they're not interested, which I probably think is true. But that doesn't mean Tom's not going to keep chipping away.
Yeah, Michael, and you're right. The way everything out of the report, all the reports out of New England was that he was a great teammate on the field and stuff like that. What ultimately happened, though, was it the things with the off the field stuff that just became too much for the front office? That they could not weather? Usually, the Patriots can weather the storm better than anybody, but in this case, why did they not weather that storm?
Well, I think they didn't know about the civil suit and the woman that's still in progress, that's still hanging over his head. And I think once that got exposed, that changed the whole conversation there. And I'm sure it's changed the conversation in a lot of cities. I know Seattle would certainly have some interest. Look, he works out every single day with Lamar Jackson in Baltimore, down in Florida. So they would have. But I know Tom, and I know Tom really thinks the world of him. And I'm not disputing the ESPN report. I never said that the Bucs were going to sign him. I'm saying I've maintained all along that Tom would want him back in, and he's chipping away and pushing harder than ever.
Wasn't he staying at Tom's house for a minute when he first got there?
Yeah, I think he was. Yeah. I mean, and look, and I said this on my pod today, Tom's going to run protection. Tom's probably telling Bruce, look, I got it. I know you experienced him in Pittsburgh. I understand that. But the reality of it is I'll handle him. You don't have to worry about him. I'll handle him. That's Tom, because Tom cares about winning. Tom cares about getting the best players on the field. Now you say, well, they got really good players. Well, no one has a guy like Antonio Brown. And Tom's worked out with the Bucs receivers, and I'm sure he's compared what he sees. And they're all good players, Godwin and Michael Evans and all those, but they're not Antonio Brown.
Michael, and shifting gears a little bit, another player that you identified, and you actually predicted this well before it even happened on your VSIN network, the stuff that you do. Great, great work, by the way, with that group. You talked about Cam Newton, and you even wrote about Cam Newton and why it would be such a great fit with the Patriots. What ultimately, how did the Patriots' journey get to that point, and then how were they able to finish it off to get Cam Newton as part of that, part of that organization?
Well, I think they just waited. You know, quarterbacks are like musical chairs. Once a team has one, they don't want another one. You know, and so, and the teams that, you know, I equate it to home buying, right? You have a house you live in, and you really crave this house down the street, and it's way too pricey. So you say, I'm just going to stay where I am. Well, eventually, the price comes down so much, you should go buy the house. And that's what's happened with Cam. In April, the price was probably way too high for New England in terms of Cam's mind. But as days have passed by and the minimum salary, and then all of a sudden Herbert goes to the Chargers, the Jacksonville Jaguars in the direction of David Blaine Caldwell. They go ahead and sign Mike Glennon to go along with Gardner Minshew. God only asked me why.
Yep.
And the Bears. I mean, the Bears trade for $17 million of Nick Foles' contract. And don't have an interest in him. So there, where was he going to go to compete for a starting job? Where could he have gone? He couldn't have gone to Dallas. That's Dak's job. He wasn't going to go to Miami. That's Tua's job. He wasn't going to go to New Orleans. That's Drew Brees and Taysom Hill's job, even and Jameis Winston. So where was he going to go? The only one that had an opportunity for him to be the man. And let me say this. He is a man. And when he walks into your locker room, every player is going to know he's the best player on the team.
Michael, with Bill Belichick there, though, you wrote about, and I'm going to get to this about Jamal Adams and scheme fit, but I want to focus now again on with Cam Newton. Is there scheme fit for what Belichick wants to do and Josh McDaniels and stuff like that? I mean, how do we need to read into how they're going to use him in New England?
Well, I mean, here's what you need to read into. You know, right on the blackboard, Al Davis used to do this to me all the time. Kid, get up to the blackboard and write this down. Write down 3,800 yards passing. Write down 600 yards rushing, right?
Right.
Write down, you know, 30 touchdowns passing. Write down 8 touchdowns rushing. Write those numbers. That's what you're getting. Now, how you get there is going to be based on how the Patriots utilize them. I think they'll utilize them more in the run game in the red zone, which is what the Cowboys should do with Dak. Because remember, this guy's got 1,600 yards rushing on third down alone. 1,600 yards rushing on third down. He converts 63% of the thirds down when he takes off and runs. This is a man, and he makes plays. Now, if you go back and look at the season he had in 2018, forget the MVP year when he was 15-1. Go back to 2018. He's 15 touchdown passes, 4 interceptions. They're 6-2. He's on pay, only threw 4 interceptions, I said, was dominant in almost every game, only lost 2 games that year, and then he hurts his shoulder. So injuries have kept him from being a good player, but you can write those numbers up on a board. 3,800 yards, 600 yards. You're going to get probably, with New England's system, you're going to get probably more than that.
So Bill Belichick has been complimentary of Cam Newton for a long time when you just read what he said about him. When did he become a guy that was interested in having a mobile quarterback as his guy? Obviously, he's had a very non-mobile guy forever.
Well, I mean, look, the one thing you have to understand in quarterbacks is the mobility is huge because it limits coverage. You know, you play cover 2 man against Dak Prescott and everybody's backs are turned. He's going to take off and run for a lot of yards, you know, and you could do that to Tom Brady because you're not really worried about Tom running. If he runs, it's going to be for 8 yards. So it changes the tenor of the conversation and how they use him will be different. Tom was able to use his mind. Uses intelligence, uses arm, uses accuracy to really utilize the skill set within the defense and make it easier for the defense, to make it hard for the defense and easier for the offense. This is going to change a little bit. It's going to be hard play action. Look, the Patriots understand this. Last year, they couldn't get the ball down the field. They could not make big plays in the passing game. And because of that, that became problematic. And they need to do that if they're going to be successful.
Michael Lombardi joins us, author, radio personality, a little bit of everything. But, Michael, I was going to ask you about, you wrote something about Jamal Adams. And there's a lot of folks down here that want the Cowboys to make the trade for Jamal Adams. In the 420 hour today, I went through your whole report about him and about being position specific. From what you know about Mike Nolan, should the Cowboys entertain even thinking about making this trade for Jamal Adams as we get ready for the season?
You know, I wrote about it on The Athletic, and I think Jamal Adams is a fabulous player, but you're going to pay a premium for a non-premium position. What Jamal Adams is a box safety, and he's a really good one. He's the top end of it, you know, and he needs to be in the box. He needs to be down in there to play the run game. The guy has 7 passes defended in an entire season last year with 1 interception. What does that tell me? That tells me he doesn't make a lot of plays on the football in the passing game. What he does make plays on, he's got 6.5 sacks rushing. He can attack the pocket. But that's all scheme related. And unless you're willing to build a scheme around him being down there, and what I wrote about was the Seattle scheme with Cam Chancellor was perfect because Cam lined up in the box. But what we've seen lately, and we saw it in Dallas and we see it all over the league, is the Seattle Pete Carroll scheme is dying. You can't live with a zone concept. Just ask the 49ers in the Super Bowl. Everybody thinks Seattle played man-to-man when Sherman was there. They played 80% zone. They're a cover 3 team. They read the pattern, and they break on the ball, and they rely on their defensive front. And what happens is if your front can't dominate, you're going to get beat. The Chargers were one of the worst teams in football last year on third down because their front didn't dominate, even though they had Ingram and Bosa. The Jacksonville Jaguars couldn't stop anybody. They're running the same scheme. Atlanta couldn't stop anybody. This is all Pete Carroll's scheme. In fact, Pete Carroll went to playing more cover 2 last year than he's ever played in his life because he couldn't stop anybody in his cover 3 scheme. That's the problem. I wrote about Jamal Adams in my book. He's a great player, but he was a player that the rules have legislated against. You can't hit the defenseless receiver coming across the middle. You can't have a big hit. You can't use intimidation any longer. And that's Adams' game. He's not a pass cover guy. He's an attack guy. And attack guys are wonderful to have, but when you got to pay a premium, i.e. draft choices and money, hold on.
Michael, I'll focus now on the Cowboys addition, and we really don't feel like they have a right defensive end right now. And we understand how important defensive line play is. I mean, when I was working with you, I learned a lot about defensive line play. What are they going to get out of Aldon Smith? Can you even crystal ball this? I mean, I know you know Jim Tom Sula and probably have some respect for him, but could they get something out of Aldon Smith, much like they did Robert Quinn last year?
You know, I one thing I know about great defensive line coaches, they're lion tamers. They got a top hat, and they're going to put a stool in there, and they're going to make the players better than they really are. And Thomas Sula is one of the best in the league, and I have great respect for him. And I think he'll get something out of Aldon Smith. I think if he's eligible to play, they'll get him in shape. Now, they're not going to use him for 60 plays. They're going to save him and Lawrence for the critical downs. They're going to make sure that they can win those critical downs when you need to make a play. He'll make everybody a better player. He pushes the defensive lineman. And if you're going to be a great D-line coach, you can't be buddies with him. You've got to demand from him. And I think he'll do that. I think it's one of the best additions to the Dallas Cowboys team this year is Thomas Sewell. I put a lot of faith in that. And they're going to have to because I'm not sure they're going to be able to live with their corners if they can't get pressure from the front. So it's going to be a big year for Lawrence. It's going to be a big year for Aldon Smith. It's going to be a big year if they get Randy Gregory back. You know, Mike will mix it up. He'll be balanced in zone dogs and man dogs and all that. He'll do a little bit of everything like they did in New Orleans, but it's going to come down to getting pressure when you rush 4 and being able to cover, but the pressure's got to get home. And I would say Aldon Smith, if Thomas Sula can get something out of him, it's going to be on certain situational downs.
And Michael, before we let you go, and we really do appreciate you coming on with us today, the situation, we're almost 2 weeks away from the decision about Dak Prescott's contract. You've been a front office guy for a long time, though. What are you thinking if you're in Jerry Jones's shoes? Put us in that situation, and then put us in, if you can be, in the agent's shoes and what they might thinking about right now. Where are you falling on whether this deal gets done or not?
Well, I think the biggest issue is the agents dealing with Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes, the unknown. Todd France doesn't want to get embarrassed. He doesn't want to turn in a deal at $36 million and make him the highest-paid quarterback, and then 3 weeks later, Deshaun comes in at $42 million and Mahomes comes in at $45 million. He don't want to do that. He doesn't want to do that. That's how you lose clients in the agent world. Meanwhile, Jerry's worried about what's the cap going to be like next year? Where am I going next year? How should I structure this deal? I don't think Jerry has a problem paying him. And I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's fair to say that they brought Andy Dalton in to challenge him. No, they want to pay him. They want to do 5 years. They're willing to go out with it. They're willing to pay him cash up front. France wants to double dip the market and make it highest average per year. Agents want to make a short-term deal and a high average. Owners want a long-term deal, and they'll pay a high average. So there's got to be somewhere in the middle. But I think the biggest issue here is Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. Until those deals get done, France can't rest comfortably with the deal he does for Prescott.
Michael, I'm trying to get Jadeveon Clowney, not Jamal Adams. You cool with that, Clowney on the Cowboys?
No, I mean, he'll be standing next to you for most of the games. You know, he'll be standing next to you for most of the game. He had 3.5 sacks last year for Seattle. You got to be able to get a guy that can play all the time. Now, he's a great player, and he flashes. But as the great soccer coach Alex Ferguson once said,
here he goes.
Don't confuse world-class moments for world-class career.
So you take Adams over Clowney?
I never would take a defensive. I'd never take a box safety over a rusher. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. But Jerry's got other pressing needs to spend his money on. He needs to get Dak signed, and he needs to worry about his cap next year. You know, this ain't the smorgasbord. This ain't Denny's. We're not going through the buffet line and going to eat everything. You got to be pick and choose. And Jerry's got to sign his quarterback and then worry about how he's going to manage his cap next year. Both players, to me, are not affordable for Jerry.
Michael Lombardi, we appreciate the time, man. Thanks so much.
Excellent.
Thanks.
All right, there he goes. It's Michael Lombardi, the GM Shuffle, writes for The Athletic, doing a little bit of everything, and a good man, I believe.
He is.
Brian tells me
that. Yeah, he is.
Who is the NBA wild card with the restart? Which team? It's next in the nation. Welcome back, G-Bag Nation. It is time to take another look at the NBA. And who is the wild card of this NBA postseason that will be upon us after we knock out 8 regular season games in the bubble? This segment's brought to you by Rubin & Associates. If you're drowning in debt, call our guy Mark Rubin at 1-800-LAWYERS. Mark will talk with you personally, take control of your debt, eliminate your stress, and allow you to live life again. It all starts with a simple, confidential phone call, so pick up the phone right now and call Mark Rubin at 1-800-LAWYERS. Mark Rubin, Rubin & Associates at 1-800-LAWYERS. Now, Brian, I know you are going to love this because it's exactly what you were talking about yesterday, and I think the guys at the Ringer were clearly listening to the show. They must be Tolos, because the title of this is, are the small ball Rockets sleeper contenders in the NBA's restart?
Mm-hmm.
And they go through the most fascinating team in the NBA playoffs, other than the Mavericks, of course.
The winners.
Wait, you get the Rockets winning the championship?
No, Mavericks. Mavericks winning the championship, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Five reasons we gave you that, you know? We gave you five reasons why they're all going to win it.
Yeah, about an hour ago.
Yeah.
So they're going through and they're exploring what's been going on with the Houston Rockets, and they start exactly where you did yesterday, where it's the grand experiment in Houston started out with a bang.
Mm-hmm.
In the Rockets' first game after trading Clint Capella for Robert Covington and going all in on small ball, they went into Staples Center and beat the Lakers 121-111. Everything went according to plan. Nobody taller than 6'7 in the starting lineup. Russell Westbrook took advantage of the driving lanes to slice through the NBA's number 3 defense, 41 points. Rockets hit 10 more threes than the Lakers, pushed the pace, baited them into less efficient post-ups on offense. But then comes the deflating of the balloon. More of a mixed bag over the next month.
Yeah.
They went 8-6 mm-hmm. with a net rating of +1.5 in their last 14 games before the shutdown, with impressive wins against Boston and Utah.
There you go.
And ugly losses to New York and Charlotte.
Hey, I'll tell you what, though. There's some teams that are pretty good that have lost to New York this year, by the way. I think your Dallas Mavericks, like, twice.
Yes.
Well, that's called lack of focus. It's called playing down.
Yeah, that was early in the year, Brian.
I'm just telling you, it seemed like I was watching 5 games, and all of a sudden, 2 of them were losses to the Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, going, well, okay, what's this season going to be all about?
First 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah, what's this going to be all about?
I think this is a really cool write-up on the Houston Rockets, and if you're allowed to, I kind of admire the way that the Rockets go about their business, because Daryl Morey is willing to push the envelope at all times, whether it's player acquisition or style of play. Over the last 8 years, Houston's been in the top 2 in the league every year at taking threes. So Houston's one of those teams that is looking at, like, all right, what are some of the trends in the league? All right, push it. go.
Yep.
Do it more than they are.
Yep.
Like, they take it to, what is this conclusion hinting towards, and where does it end? Go to there. Let's go to the end point. They've gone that way sort of with doing whatever it takes to add the superstar player and being aggressive in that way, and they've been that way with three-point shooting, and now they're going that way with small ball, which, you know, Mike D'Antoni don't mind.
That's what he does.
Throw that ball up there. I don't care. Take all the threes.
And I think they could be the real wild card because, and I cannot stand James Harden, but over the last couple of years, whenever they lose their final game in the playoffs, is because his usage rate is just ridiculous because his legs are gone. He's still jacking up threes, but he's not making them anymore. I think with this shortened schedule under a bubble or down at the bubble, I think they have a real good chance of shocking teams because – like Brian was mentioning yesterday, the Lakers are built on the inside-outside. They can do it inside and outside where the Rockets get more bang for buck hitting all those threes. And yeah. Russell can also drive to the middle if he had to.
Yeah, you know, but if you look at their roster too, I took a peek at it. I was thinking of something like, okay, we were talking about small ball and all that. That's not a young roster, by the way.
Nope.
That's a veteran-laden group, you know, 10 years, 11 years, 13 years. I mean – you know, this could be – maybe this break might have helped them a little bit, but I don't know about them getting back into that mode of where, like you're talking about, Jeff, where you're having to run up and down the floor and just gun it.
Are you saying hamstrings could happen to the Rockets?
I thought it was really interesting how they were going to come up with the small ball. I did. I remember Jeff and I were sitting there at Milo's and just watching that, and we were having a burger and looking up at the screen and going, there's no way. The Lakers are going to pound it down inside on them, and they have no answer. But they didn't, and it was the first night, and everybody was thinking doom and gloom. And, yeah, Jeff, you're talking about, was it, you said 8-6, you know, down the stretch playing that way.
Yep.
But the Rocket team to me is a team that I think they have to be interested to play. You know, I mean, and maybe I keep talking about age. I keep talking about health. I keep talking about, are they interested in playing? You know, this might be one of those teams that will ratchet it up and play, you know, and say, you know what, this might be a good shot for us with all that's going on right now. Maybe we could all come together here and make a little bit of a run.
They can focus. There's no Rick's strip club down there in the bubble.
Well,
okay. All right.
Shots fired at Harden.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, though. Whatever it takes kind of a thing, I'm one of those guys. But I do like the Rockets, and I do like their build. I like their experience. I really, really do. And do I worry about, though, the overall health? Maybe in this, you know, maybe not having, but the back to, not so many back to backs, but every other day playing, you know, is this going to be a team that's going to get wore down? I'm excited about seeing them play because I'm against you on this one, Chris. I do like Harden and I do like Austin River. I do like those guys. I like the shooters they have, you know.
Well, and so. As the Ringer goes on and they talk about who this has been the best for, and since they've gone to the small ball, it's actually been Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
Who the story on Russell Westbrook has always been, well, you know, his usage rate is through the roof and he puts
that's
up
what Chris
huge
was talking
numbers,
about. Yeah.
But he's inefficient.
Yeah.
Well, since they went tiny man ball, Russell Westbrook before the trade was getting 26 points a game, shooting 45% from the field, and 23% from three.
Brick.
Since the trade.
And get his own rebound and do a triple-double.
Yes. Since the trade, 32 points per game, 55% from the field, 38.5% from three.
Ooh.
It's been Russell Westbrook who's been impacted the best because now – everything is spread out. There's no Clint Capella down low. There's no one in the way. And what he's done is he stopped shooting threes, and he just goes to the rack. And he's either going to dunk it, make a layup,
finish,
or pass it to somebody for an open three. So Russell Westbrook has suddenly became a really efficient player as opposed to what he's always been. He's de-emphasized the three. He's been going to the rim. And his assists have dipped.
Yes, his dimes.
His dishes, those have dipped. And they looked at it and said, well, the reason for that is interesting. The reason has nothing to do with him. and this is what's going to determine if the Rockets can win a championship, his teammates are just missing.
Mm.
He's been giving them open threes left and right, but his teammates were just missing. The guys besides Westbrook and Harden are shooting 35% from three since the trade. And that's not good enough. It needs to be higher than that. That would be tied for 17th in the league for the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
And here is where the secret weapon comes in. I hate to do a Rockets segment. Go Mavs, go. MFFL, win the championship. But it's really interesting. It's where Eric Gordon comes in.
Yeah, he's good. Oh, my goodness.
Knee surgery in November.
Mm-hmm.
Hadn't been really good this year.
Mm-hmm.
Been in only 34 games. Worst three-point year of his career. 31.9%. Worst two-point percentage of the last 4 years. What they're hoping is that this layoff lets him actually get healthy, get his knee back, return to form, and all of a sudden you've got an elite third option.
He is like their Jalen Brunson, but he's older. In other words, one day Maverick fans hope that Jalen Brunson turns into Eric Gordon because Gordon is that good.
Yeah, and Gordon, he's their third best scorer, third best playmaker. Yeah. He's the team's best outside shooter mm-hmm. when he's on. Made Donovan Mitchell's life hell in the playoffs last year.
He does
arguably the best two-way player on the roster. So now Eric Gordon being back and getting big minutes also makes them even smaller.
Yeah.
Because the guy he'll be replacing on the floor is one of the bigger guys of their tiny men. So they're going to be even smaller. And so they fascinate me, and I have no idea how it's going to play out for the Rockets. And I have no idea what seed they're going to be. They're one of those teams that could bounce around anywhere from three to six or seven.
They're only a game and a half in front of the Mavericks, but they're tied with Oklahoma City, I believe. And so the Mavericks start the season off against them. That's the first game on this July 31st. And if the Mavericks were to upset them because they weren't ready yet, it could go all over the place. By the way, the odds makers have the Rockets winning 5 and the Mavericks winning 4.
Yeah, I think the line was 1.5 in this one, so they're really trying to. Yeah,
Rockets.
I'm fascinated by him too, Jeff, because again, the offense. That's what I'm, and if it's a different way, if you could figure out a different way to play, we always talk about playoffs defense, but this might be if they have some success doing this, I wonder how many other teams would say, maybe this is just spread everybody out. Have a penetrator, and then have a bunch of shooters, mm-hmm.
I mean, we're already seeing it, right?
When
people are talking about Andre Drummond, it's like, nobody wants to trade for him. Yeah. Nobody wants to give big money. Like, what do I want with a 7-foot awesome shot blocker who shoots 60% from the field?
Yeah. And that's
the whole league's like, nah.
Yeah, and that's why, believe it or not, Boogie Cousins is still not signed anywhere, even though he's coming off this injury. He's not playing this summer at all, but he's another guy that even though he can shoot a three, and he's got a lot of talent. He's just a big this down low.
NBA power rankings heading into the bubble from CBS Sports. Milwaukee Bucks, number 1.
Really? Over the Lakers, huh?
Said better record.
Yep, true. They were on their way to get 70. They would have joined the Warriors and Michael Jordan's Bulls as winning 70 games. That's where they would have had to.
They would have had to win every game. They were 53-12. They would have had to win every game.
It wasn't impossible. They had an 18-game winning streak when the Mavericks beat them.
So the Bucks are number 1, although I think, let's go around the room real quick. If the Bucks played the Lakers in the finals, who are you picking?
The savvy Lakers with LeBron. And I think the Greek Freak is a better player. But LeBron, he knows the refs and the ins and the outs.
I think the Lopez brothers get some magical stuff happening.
So you like him at number 1. Okay.
I'll take. I know it sounds crazy. I'll take Milwaukee. I think this is Milwaukee's year. I really do.
You're sleeping on J.R. Smith?
I think.
Yeah, how dare you?
I think there's something
magical.
He's
going to make up for that moment.
I wasn't joking about the Lopez brothers, but I've seen Milwaukee play a couple of times. I just think this is their year. I really, really do.
Lakers are 2. Clippers are 3. Celtics are 4. Yep. Raptors are 5.
Mm-hmm. It has something about the Raptors without Kawhi. That's how good they still are. The defending champion. He is. He's Louisville's own.
Pretty good too.
He's Louisville's own. Went to high school in Louisville.
Yeah.
Nuggets are 6th. 76ers are 7th. And the weird part is that they moved their rankings based on the schedule release.
Mm-hmm.
The 76ers moved up 3 spots in the power ranking because they hit the schedule jackpot. and they think they might be able to move up from number six in the East, where I'm like, who cares? There's no home court advantage, but I guess if you get to dodge an opponent, that makes sense. Miami at 8, OKC at 9, Houston at 10, the Mavericks 11th in the power rankings.
Did you not say Utah? Did I miss Utah?
12th.
Jeez.
Got them 12th.
I tell you, Utah was playing well at the end.
You know what they're saying?
I'm just telling
you,
man.
Rudy and Donovan aren't getting along.
You're probably right about that. But
COVID.
If you were talking about the teams that were hot at the end,
yeah,
Utah was one of those
teams.
Nobody
really wants to play them because they're really good.
There's a lot of people that are pretending that the Mavericks can go up there and that Utah could fall out of the four spot. They're 2.5 games ahead of the Mavericks at number 7.
I'd be surprised.
But, yeah, as they say here, they say if things go poorly in the 8 seeding games, the Jazz could play themselves into a first-round matchup with the Clippers. And that's probably not what they're trying to do. So
no.
There you go, a little NBA action for you, the G-Bag Nation. Coming up next, is the Shy 9 still banned from the show? And why are there flying snakes? It's next in the Nation. Thank you, Lucius. Now, everybody out of the way, it's time for Jeffrey. Which is what everybody knows.
Clear the lane.
This is what I crave at all times, is the spotlight and more me. It's time for me. Now, if you saw my tweet last night, I did say we were going to have on Miko Cena Shredded Cheese Guy.
I thought.
Spoke to him this morning, and it didn't work out for us. So, in real life.
Because you asked him one question.
No.
Why?
No. Yeah, well.
Why did you tweet that?
So, I talked to him last night first, and we got him booked. And then this morning, he was like, hey, can I holler at you real quick? And I said, go ahead. And he said, I wanted to call you instead of text to let you know this. He said, I don't want to do the interview or any interviews or anything like that. He said, if you want to tell everybody, like I do obviously apologize and regret the tweet. And I know that the timing on it was awful in hindsight. And he's like, I'll be honest with you. I really didn't know how Twitter worked. He said over the month of May, I looked it up and I had like 100 impressions and that tweet got 5.4 million. And he said, but now like it's affecting real life, like wife, kids, harassment. And he's like, so like I apologize for the tweet. And he did say, though, he was like, but you can say like people have no problem if you criticize an airline because everybody doesn't like them or anything like this. He's like, I do That's stand true. Behind that. I think I should be able to go out to a restaurant and get good service even during, you know, COVID-19. But he said, but I don't, you know, the attention, I don't want the attention. I don't want any of that stuff right now. So Shredded Cheese Man
it's crazy.
Not with us today.
It's just insane what people are complaining about out here.
Yes, and that's what he's like.
Flowers,
that's the part I get.
Mass,
yes. Yes, he's like, that's the part I totally understand. And it was a stupid tweet. And I've talked to me, Cena, and we're cool. He was like, but he was like, yeah, so I get it. But cancel culture is out to get him right now. And he's like, we just.
What
don't
do you mean he talked
spot.
To me, Cena? Like,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
What
I want to know
do?
About this. What they said.
Talk to the marketing people. They were inviting him back. They were like, hey. And
oh,
he
they
said,
didn't ban him?
No, they didn't ban him. They wanted him to come back, and he was like, I'll come back, but if I do, like, he was like, literally, to try to make this right, I want the same server, I want to pay for my whole meal, I want all this, but, so yeah, no Shredded Cheese Man today,
Did he give you any idea why he did it? I mean, I know you said he doesn't understand Twitter and all that, but did he give you a sense?
I'll say this, people
went back.
Was
he trying to shame him?
People went back on his Twitter account and pieced all the different things together. And over the last year or two, there's been 4 or 5 different times where he would tweet at a company about the service. So he's one of those guys that uses Yelp. If he has a negative experience, he's going to share it.
Okay.
So, yeah, like he'll share a negative experience because he's like, hey, that's what those services are for, is to tell people about your experience. So, but, you know, there you have it. No Shredded Cheese Man today. We do have flying snakes, though. Which is something I didn't know about. Now, Lucius, I count on you to be the country man of the show.
Now,
were you familiar? You are the most country one on the show, aren't you?
I mean, you're telling me this now.
Yeah. Are you? But aren't you?
I feel like I came up like every Texan. There's some horses in my life.
Uh-huh.
I did some shoeing, did some fishing.
I did not do any shoeing.
Okay.
I got Brian? Stepped on by a horse one time.
See?
In the chest.
Yeah. Lucius is the voice of the countryman on the
Bale some hay, you know, stuff like that.
But yep. I have not.
For summer jobs.
Did you know
learn how to drive on a dually?
Yeah, see?
There you go.
See?
F-350.
Diesel? Diesel? Yeah. Was it diesel? Yeah.
Yeah, big dually. Yeah.
Did you know there was such a thing as flying snakes?
Okay. I've heard, like, snakes that were in the trees in Georgia, yeah, in Florida area, like by the swamp where I first came from, Brunswick, Georgia, that would fall out of the tree to attack you.
I would like to point out that you just said the swamps where you're from, yeah, that you shoe horses, baled hay, and that you were hesitant when I referred to you as country.
Oh, there's two different times in my life, but I guess you're right.
Okay.
Oh, that wasn't the right drop.
They've studied flying snakes, and they now know how it works, kind of. They got these flying snakes such as the Chrysopelea paradisi, also known as the paradise tree snake, mostly in South and Southeast Asia, but they will legitimately be up in a tree, and then they're like, well, I can't reach that other tree. There's no branches here, and so they will literally fly from tree to tree. We got flying snakes, which that's terrifying to me. I think we've got enough going on right now that it signifies that end times could very well be upon us, and the sure preppers might be in a good spot.
Do we have video of this? Do they ball themselves up and then launch? Is that how they get to tree to tree? Is that
they launch?
Yeah,
they do a launch maneuver.
Yeah,
and they're not going up,
right,
and flying.
They're trying to get out.
It's a downward glide.
Oh,
but they are flying. Like, they're not falling.
They're
flying.
Whoa.
And yeah, they did we had a new study here, and new studies are my favorite thing. The research was published in the journal Nature Physics. They studied them at Virginia Tech. Fine institute there.
Go Hokies.
Go Michael Vick.
I pictured them using their little tails as propellers at the end.
Man, no? And you're basically right.
No!
Kinda. Not, I mean,
oh,
not
I was
like,
laughing.
Not like the one in the Robin Hood cartoon.
Yeah.
But they put motion capture tags on 7 snakes and they filmed them with high speed cameras as they flew across a 4-story high theater. Some guy named Jack, he's a professor in the Department of Biomedical Engineering and Mechanics at VaTech, been studying these things for 20 years, and he said, in all these years, I think I've seen close to 1,000 glides, and seeing it in person, there's something a little different about it. It's shocking still. What exactly has that animal been doing? Being able to answer questions I've had since I was a grad student many, many years later is incredibly satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of just the undulation. They do their wiggle maneuver, and somehow that creates the aerodynamics for a snake that undulating their body as they glide through the air, those movements allow them to take flight. It's just something about the slither. I bet there is a tail whip in there because
yeah,
they don't give me an explanation that satisfies me in the story. They literally just say flying snakes are able to undulate their bodies as they glide through the air, and those unique movements allow them to take flight. That's
gross.
All they give me. That's all they give me.
What about the first one that ever tried this? Was it something brought in? I mean, is it something like, you know, okay, I got to get over to that other tree.
The original flying
snake? Yeah, like what made the original flying snake fly?
Had to be fleeing, right? Fleeing a predator? Desperation?
How about hungry and maybe saw food on the other tree or something? You know?
Yeah, but you
saw like a tree rat or something like that. And you knew you had to get over there and you're hungry and you're like, I gotta undulate through the air and get over there and eat.
I think you gotta put yourself in snake's shoes, right?
Okay.
At the point, well, they don't have shoes, but you know.
Wings.
At the point you're talking of, you're talking the origin of the flying snake.
Uh-huh.
You are a snake who this move has never been done before.
Right.
Ever in life.
Right.
No one's ever even thought of it.
Yeah.
Right? You're the original flying snake.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think hunger would be a good enough one, because if it's something that's a tree away, like you'd be like, oh, okay, I'll go down and go over there and see if it's still there. I think only fear would drive you to be the original flying snake. You're being pursued by some sort of predator, and you're thinking, I have to jump.
Like a
this
hawk?
Sucks.
Like a hawk or something coming
something
at you?
Something like that, and
yeah,
then you give a panic wiggle, and you're like, hot damn, I'm flying.
Yeah.
And then some other snake saw it, and they were like, well, crap, we got something here. And they started training their minions. And now we have flying snakes.
Okay. How about this question right here we need to know? Is it poisonous?
Yeah, good point.
They don't say.
Oh, see, we need to figure that out, fam.
That would be an important question, because if we have a snake that can fly and kill us, we have a real problem.
I feel like we're lost on the food chain right here, fam. We got flying snakes, fish, squirrels, spiders. We don't have flying humans unless we get into that taxi cab in the sky.
Iron Man. We have Iron Man. There's other flying superheroes in Avengers. By the way, Avengers is really good if you rewatch it. Just the witty lines in there. Thor says they have to go to some planet, and the little, what the thing he calls a rabbit from Guardians of the Galaxy, he goes, that's a made-up word. And Thor says, all words are made up.
There you go. That's a fact. Mm-hmm. That is an absolute fact. I've been saying that for years, fam.
Spider-Man says to Doctor Strange, he says, I'm Peter. And he said, Doctor Strange. And he goes, oh, we're using our made-up names. I'm Spider-Man then.
Yeah. All we have to do is decide. Once we decide on things, it's whatever it is. Yeah. Like money, we just decided it had value.
Hey.
I'm just telling you, it's all about decisions.
It, though.
It's all about decisions. Like diamonds, okay, we decided one day. That's expensive.
Yeah. And the things that have gone from up and down is fascinating. Like the lobster used to be trash food, and now all of a sudden it's expensive.
Yep.
Like, what? Huh?
Yep.
Because somebody decided.
Lobster was never trash food, was it?
You might want to Google that up.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. That used to be considered.
Especially after slavery.
The worst of the worst was lobster.
When black folks was cooking it out here to make some money for themselves, it was the trashiest food. That's how they did watermelon, too. They said, oh, my gosh, no. They're making money off of that?
I mean, I've got homework tonight. I got to look up lobster.
Use your Googles. And in other news that's prime for this time of the day, my favorite thing to do in the morning is basically to type in the words new study.
Not mine, but I got you.
What's that?
Not mine, but I got you.
Yeah. Well, what's your favorite thing?
I can't talk about it.
Do in the morning. This is a study on drinking, something that I'm constantly searching for. I just Google drinking is good for you and hope for the best. See if anybody's on my side. Recent study was conducted to examine whether or not the substance alcohol, famous for laying waste to brain cells, might actually help your mind, despite what you may think. When you're on the verge of launching yourself off a roof into a swimming pool that's further away than you think, alcohol does not give us superpowers. However, researchers were able to link moderate alcohol intake to improved cognitive function and better overall brain health in the long term. According to the analysis, brain functions, including vocabulary and word recall, decline slower in moderate drinkers than in those who lay off the sauce entirely.
This is what Hunter S. Thompson has been telling us for years, by the way.
Drink up just a little bit?
Yeah, all those writers, man, they're all sloshed.
Hemingway.
Yeah.
We do have the definition of moderate, in case you're wondering, and it's pretty generous, I think.
8 to 10.
They say guys can get away with around 15 drinks per week.
Oh.
So if you don't drink during the week, like I don't Monday to Friday, I can go 8 and 7 on the weekend. I can go hard. And women have to limit themselves to 8. So, sorry, ladies. Men get to drink about twice as much as you because we're men, and that's the way it goes. So there you go, flying snakes and beer and the non-appearance of shredded cheese guy. That's what you get in Jeffrey time. Oh, not Jeffrey time. The segment where Jeff talks about stuff.
On the podcast, I still label it Jeffrey time.
Why would you do that?
Because that's what I do, cuz.
You know damn well that's illegal. Okay. Coming up next is 6 o'clock, and I have something planned for it. And it is NFL Nuggets. More evidence. This could be the most unique offseason in recent memory. It's next in the nation.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.